Okay, this is a second recording with Judge Richard Coick. We just stopped for a moment for Judge Richard to put on the oven, but we're continuing with our interview in Hudson in his house. So, I mean, I have so many questions about what you just shared, but are there things that you want to make sure that we cover in this interview that I haven't asked you about?
I would say not really. This is probably the first time I've ever sat for an interview. So I don't know what more to expect. You haven't treated me like the often people are treated on 60 Minutes where I'm grilled. I'm thankful for that. But let's move on.
So you don't want to be grilled.
You're welcome to grill me.
Well, I'm curious about what you said about some people feeling that you're notorious, and how you deal with being a public figure in this way, what that's been like.
I am certain that virtually every judge who's been on the bench makes decisions from time to time that are not universally accepted. The one case that got me a little bit of international publicity dealt with a person who was convicted of murdering two police officers. And my responsibility at the time, many years later, was to make a determination about parole release after the parole board granted him a release. And so this was not something favored by the New York City PBA, and there was a tremendous amount of publicity by it, or about it. Ending up with at least one article in a London, UK paper.
What was that like for you?
I understood that this case was going to be not only covered by the regional press in the Albany area because of its notoriety, but also the New York City press. I didn't realize it would go to London, but it did. It had a high degree of interest by the family of one or both of the police officers who were murdered. And the city PBA, Police Benevolent Association, as well as some people who are advocating for a termination of incarceration for a man who'd been, if memory serves me, 45 or 50 years. Less than 50, that I should say that, 40 to 45 years.
But you haven't really told me about what that was like for you.
At one level, it was very interesting because when I had to hear the case up in Albany, at least hear the oral argument. There was not a trial in this case. It was a case basically done by orally arguing the application to me, as well as making a written submission. And it was a case done on the law, not for a jury to make determination as to the facts. That was the case in which when I parked in a secure lot in Albany, I was greeted by at least a half a dozen cops with some dogs and a horse to escort me into the chambers because of the tension between the supporters of the applicant for release and the opponents. I personally felt safe with them, and I felt safe at any other time dealing with that case.
What about at home?
There have been, from time to time during my tenure, particularly as a family court judge, in which I've made determinations that people have made certain stupid public statements that have led the police to warn me and provide security coverage from time to time for both myself and my family and any other member of the extended family living nearby. There have been other cases where I was the beneficiary, as was my wife and my father and my sister, of an order of protection requiring the defendant to stay away from me as well.
I'd love to hear about your experience as a parent.
It's the greatest job in the world and the hardest job in the world. I have three wonderful children. My son with his family in Southern California. My middle child who lives back here in Hudson with her husband. And my youngest child who lives in the greater Cincinnati area with her husband. Both my wife and I were actively involved in all phases. She probably more than me in changing the diapers and dealing with the spit up, but I had my share. Through taking them to daycare and taking them to their young activities when they were little kids, to being their coaches through the years, to helping them learn how to ski, and that would be snow ski, because we spent a certain amount of time snow skiing in the winters around here. And watching them grow to independent and successful human beings, all three of them, and contributing members of society.
Can you talk about how the difficulty of your work and the difficulty of parenting are similar or different?
That's not the question I thought you were going to ask me. What you were going to ask me is, is there any time that being a parent interfered or was it overlapped with your being a judge?
Is that the question you want to answer?
That's just what I expected. And the answer to that is at least once, when one of my children's classmates had to appear in front of me in city court, and we resolved the matter, and I was sitting at the very other end of that table later at night when my daughter walked through the door and said to me, "Dad, I hear you're a mean judge." I knew exactly what she was talking about. I said, "The kid caught a break, leave me alone." And that was the end of it. It was rather funny, actually, for my daughter to be told at school that her father was a mean judge. I don't think so. The young man at the time never ended up back in front of me or any other court of which I am aware. And so it seemed to work out well.
What kind of conversations did you have as your children were growing about your work?
I became a judge in 2008. starting in 2009. By that time, my son had graduated from college. My middle child was well into her college experiences, and my youngest was, I believe, a junior in high school. And so, while they were curious from time to time about what I did, they weren't here. Two of the three were not here to follow me on a daily basis. The youngest one was interested, but she was off doing stuff that high school juniors and seniors do.
I'm just thinking about what you're saying.
What you may not have asked me for was, what was Hudson like growing up?
Yeah.
Hudson was the economic center of the community. And because of the way employers generally paid, Thursday night was the only night that the stores were open, and it was a busy shopping night, and so you'd see a lot of activity on Warren Street of people going shopping in the three department stores that were 3, 5, and 10s, the Marsh's department store, Macy's Housewares, my parents' toy store, or other places. But it was a big night out for the families. Now, more often than not, if you're open any night, you're open on a Friday night, not a Thursday night. But Thursday night was the night for Hudson.
Why did that change?
In the early mid 60s, the area in Greenport on Route 9 Fairview Avenue started to develop as a series of strip malls. And that changed the whole flavor, ultimately changing the flavor of local shopping.
How did you meet your wife?
There was no such thing as the internet back then. I met her the old-fashioned way, on a blind date. I had an older cousin who lived in the same apartment complex that she lived in Albany, and saw me at one family function and said, "Would you be interested in meeting somebody new?" And I said, "Sure. But make sure that she is not seeing somebody, because I don't want to walk in on her in a relationship." And they did, and it was love at first sight. We've been together ever since, almost 41 years.
What keeps love alive for you two?
What keeps love? Respect. I have a tremendous amount of respect for her. And she puts up with me. That's not easy.
Can you say more?
No, this is going down for posterity. Posterity, that's enough.
Well, what do you respect about her?
everything. She's always been had my back. She is bright, intelligent, beautiful, articulate, caring, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent, to borrow from the Boy Scouts.
Wow.
Let's pull that out of my hat after 50 plus years.
How does having been an Eagle Scout, you said?
Mm-hmm.
How does that remain in your life today?
It doesn't in a direct sense, other than it has been viewed by people who have been involved in scouting as a sense of achievement, and that you have achieved the highest rank. It often is achieved at a time when you're sprouting your wings as a young, middle teenager, and there is the tug of other things, whether it be a part-time job or scholastic sports or just other activities. And most people who have some respect for the Boy Scouts understand that it provides a sense of accomplishment.
But you said it doesn't affect your life in direct ways, but that suggests indirect ways it maybe does.
If you analyze the Boy Scout motto that I basically paraphrased, they're all proper qualities. They're all good qualities. And if you try to live by those, whether you're a Boy Scout, a Girl Scout, or not a Scout at all, you generally can be a healthy and productive member of society.
What's your relationship with the outdoors like today?
With the
outdoors, with nature.
I love being outdoors. I am not an outdoorsman in the traditional sense, but I like it when I can be outdoors. I am anxious about winters now that I never was, but that's part of life living in the Northeast. I spend a certain amount of time on the golf course, if that counts as outdoors. I used to be very active, a winter skier, but conditions have required that I give it up. I used to spend summers at Copaic Lake, like I said, where we swam, fished, water skied, played outside. It was, you know, have breakfast, get out, I'll see you at lunch, get out, I'll see you at dinner.
Are any of the skills that you learned as a young person in the Scouts things that you can whip out these days?
Every now and then, tying knots. And I'll tell you, one skill that I learned in Boy Scouts that carried through to my career as an attorney, particularly as a young attorney, and there were certain map reading skills that I learned as a Boy Scout about how to read a map or a survey, that when I got out and practiced some real estate law, there was a direct application, and I was ahead of many of my age contemporaries because of the exposure and education with that topic that the Boy Scouts gave to me.
So you're a part-time judge now.
I'm an as called upon judge.
Okay.
Which is a part-time position, which gives me virtually the same authority as a full-time judge, with the exception of jury work.
How do you feel about coming to this period of working less, or, you know, anticipating a time where you would work maybe even less than that?
Well, I would... Working less came as a big change to my life, because I had been working since my early middle teens when required to do so in the family business and elsewhere. I would like to be working a little more than I'm working now, but I think that the position that I have could fit the bill, but I'm not prepared to go back to work full time. Fortunately, I don't have to.
Why would you like to be working more?
I'm still capable.
Right.
I would like to work. I like working. I don't want it to be full time anymore after 50 plus years of working. But I'd like to do a little more than I'm doing.
What has having more time been like?
The ability to do some things that we crammed into small spaces of time. Earlier in this interview, I said that I read religiously the papers every day. That was a luxury, to read as much as I read. The ability to get to the gym as often as I'd like. The ability to spend time with my children and my grandchildren that I would not be able to spend in the blocks that I do because I have the time available to me now.
How is being, I mean, your grandfather?
I am.
How do you see being a child in Hudson as different than it was when you were growing up?
I think it's very different. The and this isn't just Hudson, but to a large extent, there's no free unsupervised play anymore for a 9-year-old, so to speak. Much of my play, as I talked about earlier, in the places that I went and the people I played with, we were all in the same boat. Go outside and play, and I'll see you later. Now, you wouldn't let a 7-year-old kid go play in Prison Alley, unsupervised, or at all. Yet we did back then, and I think that that's changed. If you play softball or baseball, it's organized by parents. Kids may be playing it, but you know, you have a practice for this particular team there. There's very little pickup games where parents aren't involved and kids have to figure out whether you're really safe or out, or how many more runs you have and how much longer we're playing and getting arguments resolved.
How do you see that change happening?
I don't know that you do anymore.
What's Prison Alley?
Hudson, from south to north, the first four alleys. The alley behind Warren Street, between Warren Street and Union, is Cherry Alley. The alley between Warren and Columbia is Prison Alley. The next alley over is Long Alley, and then there's Rope Alley, CPLR. And for an attorney, those are four easy letters to remember because they also stand for civil practice laws and rules. But in Hudson, it's Cherry, Prison, Long, and Rope.
Seems like alleys are important here.
When this city was laid out, I believe, by the Jenkins family and others in the 1700s, they were smart enough to recognize that they should put alleys in to allow for the delivery of items that didn't necessarily have to go through the front door. And if you think of New York City, there are no alleys. In Hudson, it was well laid out that there were alleys between the major east-west streets. Growing up, the first 10 or 12 years of my life on Warren Street, they became a natural place to play for the same, my buddies who were also involved on the same kinds of places where we lived.
Are there any big themes that you're reflecting on or lessons that you're thinking about at this stage of your life? What's on your mind these days?
Oh, I am such a lousy golfer after so many years. The health and, first and foremost, is the health and safety of my family. That's a theme. I am an avid sports follower, so the Knicks who've made it to the NBA championship round for the first time in 27 years has been exciting to follow. I don't have any overriding themes or grand cosmic concepts of life except that I hope my family is happy and healthy.
Okay, well, I think we've been talking for around an hour. Is there anything else that I should have asked you about that I didn't?
You pretty much covered it, I think. I think that, you know, we covered, from my perspective, Hudson and downtown, and I gave you a little bit of a perspective of that. Covered my career, which has been completely Hudson-based. In Austin, Texas, they refer to citizens who were born and raised in Austin because so many people have lived there, but those people who are native Austonians as unicorns. And I'm a unicorn for Hudson because I was born at the local hospital, brought home to our house on Warren Street, raised in Hudson. I did spend my college and law school years, at least while in residence at college or law school, out of Hudson, but immediately returned and have stayed within the city of Hudson for my entire life. I love the place.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.